Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Tuesday short week for the Trojans. They had to play on Sunday night, beating the Washington State Cougars 38-13 after thanks to a first quarter explosion by Keaton Slovis. And I'm on Ross St. Brown. We're going to talk about that with Keely Yore. She'll be on the line here in a second. Follow her on Twitter at Keely is my name. Doing a great job covering the Trojans. Make sure you're checking out her instant analysis pieces up on USCFootball.com. If you have any questions or comments for the show here, please email us podcast at USCFootball.com or call or text us at 424-254-9141. But the best way is on Apple Podcasts, any of your Apple podcasting apps. If you can subscribe to the show, leave us a five-star rating, a review with some comments, feedback, suggestions, and any questions you have will bump you right up to the top of the list. I think we have a question today, so we're going to ask Keely to read those reviews and send us the question. Keely, how are you doing today?
Hello, Ryan. Doing well. Still trying to get my bearings after a Sunday night game. That was a little weird on the whole system, but we're on a Tuesday pod. We're in the regular schedule, so I'm thinking I'm getting the hang of it.
Yeah, that Sunday game set me off. Like, I usually rewatch the game on Sunday, so I didn't rewatch the game on Sunday, and then I didn't bother to even do it on Monday. So it just sort of set me off. I've been doing like a column after the game, then I kind of waited till today to do a call me thing. So it kind of threw off my mojo from covering the game.
Yeah, and especially doing a live show on Monday night, it was like, okay, is it a Sunday? So it's a little confusing, but I kind of like the Sunday game, the only college football game being played. It kind of felt kind of cool. So I don't know.
Yeah, it was pretty neat that, you know, it's the only college game on. It's sort of tried to wedge it in between the late afternoon NFL game and the Sunday night game, but and I don't think the Sunday night game was that good, but it was fun. I mean, to just kind of check it out and then doing a show on Monday night that we normally do on Sunday night, opposite Monday Night Football. That was fun too. But yeah, that sort of kind of throws a wrench in everything. We'll still do our Wednesday show previewing USC and UCLA. We'll do that Tunnel Vision. And I'll also do another podcast. We'll get David Woods on from Bruin Report Online. So previewing the UCLA squad. So we're still doing our normal stuff, but it's just kind of been crammed in the beginning of this week.
Yep. Alrighty, shall we go to we have three new five-star reviews, Ryan.
Wow. But thank you, everybody, for those.
Thank you. First up is from Jen, who says, I'm new here, but gave us 5 stars. She said, love the pod, one of two that I listen to on a daily basis. The other is Raina Troy, our friends at Raina Troy. I just want us to win. It's hard to listen because we all know the team can be better. All of us have a pretty good idea why they aren't, too. I hope we have more of Chris Trevino. Clearly a welcome addition personality-wise. Can we make Chris more of a regular thing? Oh, and let's hear more from G-Mart. Dude has been a ghost, but Gerard has his own premium podcast now, right?
Yeah, Ryan? He hasn't put one up for a while, but, we got to get him to do some more of those. Yeah. So, those are on USCFootball.com. So you got to check them out there.
Yeah, early signing period is coming up real quick. So I'm sure he'll be around and out and about pretty soon. And then we had another 5-star from Hero Fine, who said, must listen for USC fans. This is the podcast you need to listen to for all things USC football. Ryan has the best food to football analogies in the history of broadcasting. Woo! Keep them coming. And Keely's knowledge and insight into the program are invaluable. Although sometimes she seems to hold back on her opinions a little. Don't be afraid to let it rip, Keely. That's what we want.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, look at that. And then he has a question. He says, I always hear about how thin USC is at linebacker, but I never seem to hear about Taylor Katoa. What's going on there? Is he just not good enough to contribute? Thanks for giving me hours of enjoyment every week. John the Dag.
Thanks, John, for that. Yeah, I think, was it a shotgun that asked about Taylor? And it was sort of like he's still on his way back. And it's just like he's not quite, he comes back from the mission. I forget exactly what the answer was, but something like that.
Yeah, obviously, it's hard to get back into football shape when you've been on a mission for 2 years. And then I believe he had there was a little bit of an injury there, too. I forget what specifically it was, but it also hindered him coming back. So I think they're just treating this as a time period for him to get back into football shape and not really ready to go immediately for USC.
Yeah. And, you know, they did move Raymond Scott over. And like you saw in this game, it really was more about putting the you know, other starters on the field as opposed to, you know, someone like him that could come in and contribute, but not necessarily, you know, oh, he's not the next guy up to be the starter. They go like, well, we'd rather move Talanoa Hufanga down. Similar to what we see on the offensive line. Like, if you're the backup, you know, left guard, but you're, you know, 10th on the, you know, the total list of offensive linemen, if the left guard goes down, it doesn't mean you move up and play. Like, you're going to be 10th on the list still. Someone else, number six, is going to move over there, and or someone else is going to move around.
Yeah, but Helton did say that that moving Talanoa was actually installed in preseason, and that was something that they tried to do for more spread teams. So it wasn't specifically a Raylan Goforth adjustment. It was actually something that they had kind of pre-prepared for Wazoo specifically. So it worked out in that sense.
Sure, Keely, sure.
Okay, but still.
That's what they said, though. You're right. That's what they said. I didn't buy it, but that's what they said.
Well, I think the point is that I don't think it's viable to have Talanoa there for every team you face. You know what I mean? There's going to be adjustments that you have to make, even though Talanoa is a beast, and we'll get into that. But I'm just saying, I don't think it's the solution to everything, where I think some people have adopted that at this point.
Very true, yeah.
So then our final five-star review is from LV Trojan, who gave us 5 stars. Fulfill your Trojan football fix. If you're a USC football fan, this is by far the best podcast to subscribe to. The Parasol Podcast, Tunnel Vision, and Podcast of Champions, Ryan Abraham's other podcasts on the Pac-12 as a whole, are all great sources for Trojan-related info and entertainment. I've been a season ticket holder for over 20 years, despite living out of the state. And I tell everyone that you either have to be a season ticket holder, a USCfootball.com reader, or a Parasol Podcast subscriber to truly call yourself a diehard USC fan. There you go. Thank you, LV Trojan.
LV Trojan, that's awesome. Thank you so much. It's a, you know, it's so nice. We appreciate that. And we did get a shout out. You know, one of my, they're easily in my top 10 favorite USC podcasts, the Reign of Troy people over there, Lisa and Michael. No, we're just kidding. I love those guys. I was listening to their post game, you know, their car cast, and they both got the Rona. I feel so bad. I know. So
they sounded so sick and sad. So
yeah.
Yeah,
I thought they were just under the weather, and then they like say, "We've got the Rona." I was like, "Oh man!" So you know, sorry, you know, you guys have done that. They're friends of ours, and you know, we really wish them the best.
Yeah, they're great people, and we hope they recover quickly. But I've been checking in on them almost daily, just making sure they're doing okay. But it's they're having a tough go about it, so hopefully they get better soon. I know.
Sorry to hear that, but yeah, hopefully those guys get better soon. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of their podcast, but you know, they're cool people, so that's. I'm just kidding.
Shay, just kidding. We love it.
Yeah. I wouldn't know unless I listened to it. So I had to listen to it.
Like, true. Yeah.
Okay. So before we jump into things, we've got a lot of stuff to get to. I wanted to thank our sponsor, Trader Joe's. One of the things I had mentioned for a while, go in there and pick up some fresh flowers. Like, that's cool stuff. You know, like if you want to, Keely, you want to, you know, surprise your roommate and put some flowers on the table. It's kind of cool. You know, it's you can get some Christmas-themed one. Now we're in the holidays, so pick up some fresh flowers. But I also saw another. I haven't got this one yet. Like I got the cookies last time, but they're non-dairy mint chip bonbons. I was always a mint chip fan growing up, and then I started to kind of get away from it. But these look really good, and I don't like them. I'm just kind of like, yeah. But they're not dairy, so if you have a problem with dairy, these little chocolate-covered bonbons with mint chip. Ice cream in there. So they look really good. It's coconut milk, frozen dessert. So they're not, it's a non-dairy thing. So check it out. If you want a little like frozen treat in the cold weather, this one looks like a good one.
Ooh, sounds very good. And also glad to be back to your dessert recommendations, Ryan. It feels right.
That's more me. You know, I'm just more it of is. A dessert guy. But you know, that's whatever. All right. So where we got to go here. We have some topics we want to get to. I wrote a little story about this today. Maybe we'll start with the run game. We got a Zoom call with Graham Harrell and Gary Bryant Jr. and, of course, head coach Clay Helton. And one of the things he was asked about after the game was the run game. USC had a net 5 yards rushing. Actually, it was 25 yards on 16 carries for just the running backs, but obviously not what he's been looking for. I just remember what he had said after the Arizona game, Keely, that, you know, to be a championship team, they want to run the ball better than they did last year. And last year was 120 yards a game. They wanted to be 165, 170. That's what Alabama and LSU were doing, even though they had prolific passing offenses. And then we saw a drop off over the last two games. The Utah game was 93 yards, and then this one was only five. So, you know, kind of asked, it seemed like a little bit different answers when I talked to Clay, you know, I asked Clay Helton about it. Like, is it still a priority? Cause they did win handily in those two games. They didn't run the ball very well. And he's still saying it is, you know, he feels like you need to run the ball. You might have an off game for your quarterback. Like the first two games, you know, Keaton Slovis maybe didn't play his best and they were able to run the football. Graham Harrell, I mean, he had a couple different answers, but the one that you remember is like this kind of flippant, like, well, you know, going into the half, Keaton Slovis was 17 of 17 with five touchdowns. So, you know, I'm not too concerned. So, which was like, and to me, that made sense. It's like, to me, this is really more of a passing offense that it's nice, you know, running the ball is a nice to have. I know there's USC fans that are, that's sacrilege. You got to be able to run the football. And I get it. But, you know, just watching what this offense does, they would like to run the football, but it's going to be, you're going to make your hay with this offense throwing the football. And if you happen to run it, that's great. But if you don't, you could still throw for five touchdowns in a half and blow somebody out. So I don't know, what were your thoughts in hearing everything about what everyone said about the run game, Keely?
Yeah, I mean, you highlighted it, but it was really interesting because the way it worked out is you have Helton go first and then Harrell follow him. And it was like two separate themes or they were on different pages. That was the easiest way to say it, because Helton acknowledged, you know, the second half, they were sluggish. They didn't put in 60 minutes of complete football. And so you kind of get that answer from Helton. And he said that, you know, it was everyone taking turns. And what he meant by that is it would be one offensive lineman who messed up on one play. It would be one wide receiver not blocking well in the perimeter. And then that's why you don't have the run game really go. And then we get to Graham Harrell. And just like you said, I mean, he just looked so disinterested. if I had to be honest about it, he just didn't want to talk to us today, really. And so it was just like, okay, that's interesting. And I get that. Like, everyone has off days. Maybe you don't want to answer things. I get it. But he was asked, like you said, Ryan, what's your concern level about the run game? And his exact quote was, I think when the quarterback goes 17 to 17 and a half and throws five touchdowns, you're doing some things well. So that's our level of concern. So, and I think someone in the office around him laughed at that. But, you know, it's just interesting hearing the two separate answers. And on the whole, that's the interesting thing about evaluating this game from an offensive standpoint. It's like, okay, on the air, like, they really aired out the ball well. They did well. But then when they want to actually run the ball and actually like salt away the clock, they can't really do it. The second half just looked kind of clunky. And so in a vacuum, I think you take this game for what it is and you say, hey, that was crazy by Amon-Ra St. Brown. Keaton Slovis looked good. But then you can't do the things that you want to do when you need to do them, like just run the ball in garbage time, you know? So that's concerning. And granted, I think Graham Harrell was a little bit sassy just because we got further context as to what the last 2 weeks looked like for them, you know, just with all the COVID-19 issues. And he basically said, we didn't really have our starting offensive linemen for 2 weeks due to either they were in isolation or they were in quarantine. He said basically Cortland Ford and Casey Collier were in their little playpen. That's what he called it. But usually the offensive line are out off to the side in practice on Howard Jones Field. So he said, you know, we were doing 7-on-7 for most of the week. And so you have the starting offensive lineman show up to the team hotel on Saturday and then play on Sunday. So when you have that context, I think you are a little bit more lenient about what you saw from USC. And you can see that it just looks a little bit like rust, because we saw some things from AVT that just didn't look like an AVT play, you know, so it makes sense. But the problem is that you can't just evaluate this game in a vacuum. They've had problems running the ball. They've had problems in short yardage and critical situations where everyone knows they're going to run the ball. So it's hard. It's hard to evaluate this because, like, you know, you can't really run the ball. And so to your original point, Ryan, I think you can say, yeah, just have them really sell out to the air raid. And do you really need to run the ball? That works. The caveat is that the team that you're playing against has to play man. And Helton even said today that he was surprised at how much man the Washington State played, even coming out of the second half. So yeah, it works if you're not going to have that zone coverage that USC struggled with, where they're getting pressure with three guys. But so it really depends, Ryan. And I just don't think you need a run game to have a successful offense. Otherwise, you're going to have guys keying on you, and it's not going to come as easy as we've seen. And Washington State just wasn't that great of a football team either. So it's kind of a mixed bag for me. And I know that was a run-on answer, Ryan, but I think it's complex. And I think that's what you have to look at it from different factors as well.
Yeah, no, it is complex. And that was a good run-on answer. That's fine. To be fair, They did not use that excuse. And we didn't know. Graham Harrell was pretty frank about, yeah, all the starters were in a hotel until Saturday afternoon. They walk out of the hotel, and then they played the game on Sunday. So there was no practicing with the starters. No, Clay Helton or Graham Harrell didn't say, well, we couldn't run the ball because we didn't have an offensive line for 2 weeks. You could legitimately say that. Now, we saw, Shotgun pointed out that Ohio State didn't have four of their starter offensive linemen, and they ran for 300 yards against, Michigan State, which is a good run defense. Washington State was giving up 200 yards a game. That was not a good run defense. So there, I think there's, legit reason for some concern there. But, it's one of those things where I really feel this is more of a finesse kind of offense, and you can have a lot of success without the run. I don't think this is an offense that can succeed without the passing. Like, you can't just run the ball and it's going to work. Like, you can throw the ball and maybe you run the ball, maybe you don't, and it can be a very successful offense. Yeah. And the one thing you pointed out, and I mean, I don't want to harp on this because it's, this is a pandemic. It's hard for these coaches and the players. They're not seeing their families. They're like, it's tough. They're like secluded all the time. A lot of the players and stuff, like not being able to see the families and things like that. You're, not going to go home for holidays and all that kind of stuff. But Graham Harrell just seems a little disinterested when he's doing those interviews. The one time he did it in a car, and the other, the one today earlier on Tuesday, it was just like, I felt like he was playing Tetris or something on the side and then like answer the questions. Sometimes he'd perk up a little if he liked the question a little more, but it was, it's kind of weird, but you don't want to fault him. I mean, I get, these guys are going through a lot.
Yeah, it was, I've just noticed that he usually is standoffish for the most part, even when we could talk to him in person. I think he was a little bit more relaxed in person, but I think he just has this sense of, we don't really get it, and so we're not going to ask intelligent questions, which I get that to a certain extent, because we're not offensive coordinators, I admit that, obviously, but at some point, it just feels a little like, okay, maybe you could like face us a little bit. I don't know. I get everyone has off days and doesn't want to do things sometimes, but it felt, I came away from the presser being like, ooh, he doesn't like us,
Maybe a little of that. And the thing that I mentioned this on Tunnel Vision is I agree with Graham Harrell. Like, if you're, I forget which game it was. It was, I think USC was playing, it might have been a Rose Bowl against Michigan with like Pete Carroll. And like they were doing, like Michigan was like selling out to stop the run. I'm not saying that's what happened on Sunday. And he just had the quarterback just throw the ball like every time. Like they didn't even like run the ball, and they just threw it all the time. And that's fine. Like if you can do that, you can do it. And he Slovis completed 17 straight passes to end the half. And, he had four touchdowns in the first quarter alone. I think that's a legitimate answer. It's like, we don't need to run the ball all the time. If it's there, we're going to take what it gives us. The issue I had was like Clay Helton sort of made that statement, or he did make that statement after the Arizona game. Like, this is the way it's going to be from now on. Like, we're going to be running for 170 yards a game. That's what we want to do. And I don't think you necessarily need to do that because you can throw the ball so well. So it's great if you can, but I think I had an issue with what he said because it just made it sound like, here's the new norm. And it really not. And what Graham Harrell said is like, yeah, if we're throwing the ball like that successfully, we don't, and the run game's not working. Oh, well, and we got an offensive line that's coming out of quarantine. And if we just have to throw the football, if that works, that works. I kind of liked his attitude toward it, even though it was a little, flippant, I guess.
Yeah, I guess Graham's is at least accepting what, like if the pass is working, just pass the ball, whereas, yeah. Yeah, basically what you're saying, Ryan. But the thing with Helton is Helton's going to say what he's going to say. You kind of have to take it for a grain of salt. I mean, he also said he was really excited to see Paliye this season, and look where that's ended up, So it's, I think Helton will say things, and we kind of have to just judge whether or not we take it like 100% seriously,
Yeah. Well, we'll get into the EA thing in a little bit. There was a couple of big injuries, though, that Clay Helton broke on Trojans Live on Monday night, if you want to fill people in on what those are.
Yeah, so there's two season-ending injuries, one with Greg Johnson. He tore his meniscus against Washington State. He'll be receiving surgery this week, so he will be out for the rest of the season. And then Jude Wolf actually broke a bone in his foot in the game as well. He has to get a pin in his foot, so he will be out for the rest of the season. Jude, his playing time had decreased as the season progressed just because he was dealing with an ankle injury, so I don't think you're going to see a real difference there as far as that goes. And then Greg Johnson, the thing that you take away from Washington State, obviously Greg Johnson played well, so that's unfortunate, and you want to see guys be healthy. But you also saw Max Williams, Chase Williams play really well. So they look for those guys to step up now that he's going to be gone. So USC secondary is talented enough where I don't think Greg Johnson's will be a big loss. So I think USC will be okay with these two guys. And then Raylan Goforth, he did practice on Monday. That's a light practice for USC. Helton said it looked positive. It's trending in the right direction, but he didn't play on Saturday, obviously. And then Liam Jimmins, he had a elbow subluxation. So basically dislocated his elbow. It's the same elbow he dislocated against Arizona that kept him out for a couple games last season. So just something to watch for there. He couldn't finish the game. And that's something where you have to wonder how much that also impacted USC's just ability to do things on the offensive line, because at one point you had two true freshmen playing their first college game at the guard positions in the second half. So I think that definitely impacted things as well. So whether or not Liam Jones will be good to go, he was listed as day-to-day, just something to watch for there.
Yeah, and the problem right now is you're getting down to the nitty-gritty. Like, a day-to-day injury could be season-ending. You know, like a knee knee surgery is season-ending, but so could, like, I sprained my ankle. It might take me 10 days to recover. Like, all right, well, season will be over, you know?
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I mean, besides, like, the bowl game or whatever. But speaking of, you know, season being over, so USC-UCLA this weekend, like I said, we'll preview that a little bit later on in the week, and we'll, you know, check out Tunnel Vision. But after that, that Friday, so another short week, would be the Pac-12 championship game. If USC wins, they will be the South representative. They will be 5-0 in the division. Colorado, if they win, they would also be 5-0, but only 4-0 in the division because they had one out-of-conference game. And USC would get the nod because they had one more division win, even though USC didn't get to play Colorado. No fault to Colorado, because USC had the COVID, so they couldn't they had the Rona stuff, so they couldn't play. And so Colorado basically gets screwed out of this if they go undefeated, because their opponent, two of their opponents, weren't able to play. It wasn't Colorado's fault that they didn't, the games that they missed, it wasn't on Colorado. I know what there's been a lot of talk on Twitter, Keeley. I think Kyle Bonagora and John Wilner, guys that cover the Pac-12, were trying to figure out a way for USC and Colorado to play, or for Colorado to, if they're undefeated and, you know, go in and play in the championship game ahead of a team from the North. Any thoughts on any of that stuff that people have been talking about?
Yeah, well, I think Kyle asked the Pac-12, like, would you be willing to move things around? And the Pac-12 was like, no, we're not doing that. And I think a large part of that is no one wants to move UCLA, USC in primetime. That's good, some good TV money right there. But I thought it was funny. The Pac-12's answer was like, we put protocols in place and we're not about to change them. But it was like, you also changed your out-of-conference rule in season. So can you really change things? You definitely could have. But I mean, there was a lot of hoopla for Colorado on Twitter. You know how sometimes Twitter gets very up in arms about things. And so rightfully so. I mean, it sucks for Colorado. They had two games canceled, not of their own fault. But I guess that's just the way the wacky 2020 season goes. And the funny thing is that USC could know its fate before even playing UCLA, because Colorado and Utah play on Friday. So that if Utah somehow beats Colorado, then USC clinches the South either way.
Yeah. And I had some people like tweeting at me, some guys like, you know, they lost their spine and they won't play Colorado. And it's like,
oh yeah. So
you understand that USC doesn't have a choice in this, right? Like, this is the schedule. And, talk to like some people at USC and on my thoughts on this. And I think, you know, they agreed with me for the most part, where it's not, if you wanted to consider something like that, like Keeley said, everything's changed on the go. So if you say, well, that's just not the way it's done, well, I'll give you a million things that aren't done that way. So that's a poor excuse of why you can't do something. But I think at this point, you're hanging on by a thread and you're trying to get these games played. Last week was the first time the whole Pac-12 played. No games were canceled. Only one game was delayed a couple of days. And if you didn't delay that game, USC would have been out their whole starting offensive line. So you had to delay the game just to even have it happen. But if you're going to, reschedule a game, it should be because, well, one team can't play, we're going to move some things around. If you're going to take two, what we think are healthy teams, and two other what we think are healthy teams and swap them all around, and then something gets screwed up and one team's healthy, like, hey, we were going to be able to play, and now you just moved it. You know, UCLA was going to be able to play USC, but then you moved it and they got to play Utah, and Utah got sick, and now UCLA loses their game, but they would have played. You know, there's a lot of problems with something like that. I think you don't want to mess around with a schedule that seems like it's working because you want some kind of competitive game, you know. And it's, if it was like a two teams are 9-0 or something, and it's like, okay, we want to see them play, and the teams in the north are 6-3, and just, but there's only 4, 5, 6 games. I mean, there's just not that many games. You know, you're talking about one team that's played, you know, two teams that play 5 games. It's to me, it's just not enough of a sample size. We're like, oh yeah, we have to have Colorado and USC play each other. It's like number one, number two, like the, you know, it's just not, to me, that's just not as important because it's such a small season, and I don't want to see them messing up a schedule that's, you know, already hanging by a thread.
Yeah, no, I mean, the ideal thing would be to just move everything back a week, but then you have, because we assume obviously that no Pac-12 member is going to make it to the college football playoff, so you don't really need to factor that into your timing. Just move everything back a week before you have your championship game, and then you kind of have a makeup week, but then you push into Christmas and all those holidays, so then it's like, can you really do that? So that's not ideal. But the thing that I find interesting just about the USC Colorado debate, and like you said, Ryan, it's not like 2 9-0 teams. It's like Colorado's never won against USC in their history, and then Colorado was also a 10-point underdog coming into the game. So it wasn't like this was going to be like two huge matchups where everyone was like, who's going to win? It just, USC was favored. And I know anything can happen, and USC had to win in the last minute 2 games in a row. So nothing's guaranteed with this USC team. But it just didn't seem like the matchup that I think online is trying to make it to be, you know?
Right. No, I know. I agree with you there. But it is definitely unfortunate, but you know, that's sort of like the way it rolls. So we'll see. I mean, both teams got to go out there and take care of business. And I don't have an issue with them, you know, moving the season back, but then you kind of run into Christmas a little bit and all that. So there's, you know, there's a reluctance to want to change anything else that you don't have to change. And I think there's a reluctance to extend the season at all. Like, let's add more games. Like every week, it's like a, you know, nightmare seeing if you can get to the game. And like, well, let's add another week. You're like, oh my God, like people might go crazy, like jumping off bridges because they're like, we got to do this again. So yeah. So there's a lot of issues there. There's no great answer. I mean, it starts with the Pac-12 coming into a, you know, 7-week season with no chance to make anything up. You kind of knew some weird crap would happen, and this one's pretty weird.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see the matchup. I was actually really looking forward to it before the game got canceled, but this is just a 2020 casualty, if that makes sense.
It is, and I think Colorado had a shot the way they were playing coming into that game. The one thing, you know, we didn't see really, the USC defense started playing a lot better, so that would have been an interesting matchup to watch. But you know, we'll see what happens. All right, why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back and start doing some questions. So back in a minute.
CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig? Well,
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back here on the Peristyle podcast. Keeley, we mentioned Paliie Nuotoote, and we talked about him on the Harvey Hyde podcast about entering the transfer portal. If you want to, I know we have a question about that. Maybe we can get to that.
We do. It's from Guile Smiles, who says, hello, guys. Quite a bombshell drop today, Monday, with the news that EA has entered the portal. It seems to me that though that EA's production on the field never even came close to matching the hype, and Malga and Goforth look to be better football players. Not saying that they are better athletes, but they seem to be around the ball more and their football instincts are more developed. I'm not sure we will really miss EA on the field. What are your thoughts?
You know, I don't like this take, and it's, we've seen it a lot around there. And I think it's maybe analogous to people saying JT Daniels stinks because they saw him playing in 2018 in the gumbo. I'm not saying, like, we saw a lot of these guys play in Todd Orlando's first couple of games, and it just wasn't, like, no one looked, like, sharp. I mean, they were, like, you got, like, their Marlon Tuipulotus and stuff, but the linebackers just weren't looking good. They didn't look, nobody looked good from that group, really. They were all ranked pretty low, and it seemed like they started to get it, you know, by week three, but then we didn't get to really see Palier after that, so I feel like he would have been out there making plays also, so I wouldn't you know, necessarily agree with this take. And I know Clay Hilton was asked about it, I believe, this morning, right, Keely, about EA and going to the transfer portal?
Yeah, he said that he talked to EA about it, and basically EA wanted to explore his options. He said that when it comes to the transfer portal, Clay Hilton is always going to take a supportive role. And that's a strategy that's worked out for him. If you remember Brew McCoy, Chris Steele, even Matt Fink, those are guys who transferred to USC or came back from the portal. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens with EA. I know, kind of asking around, he was not having fun. You know, he just did not look like he was having fun out on the field, and he was just frustrated where things were going and frustrated about that. So as far as Gal Smiles, like, question though, I agree with you, Ryan. You know, if you go back to when EA came out injured at the Arizona game, everyone was down on the linebackers as a whole. They really took a step forward in the Utah game, and that's where EA was just not, he wasn't there. He wasn't playing. So I don't think we can really just praise Goforth and Malga without saying, hey, what would have happened if EA was still playing and still developing? So I don't think that's a fair assessment on that front.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one, but, you know, you wish him the best. One of the ones, he also was really nice to Velus Jones, if you remember. He entered the transfer portal and came back, but then he entered again. So, and I think he caught a touchdown for Tennessee against Florida, if I'm not mistaken. So,
oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Former USC receivers catching touchdowns around the you know, I think Joshua Metorbebe's got some and stuff, so that'd be interesting.
Yeah, and also worth noting that I believe Chris Hummer of 247 said that USC hasn't cut off his financial aid yet, EA's, and there seems to be a sense around USC that they can try and get EA back. So I think this is definitely a TBD, and just watch out for this one, because Trace McGrath also entered the NCAA transfer portal, but then he was on the sideline on Sunday. So it was a little odd, like, oh, you're in the portal, but you're also on the sideline. So a little odd in that sense.
Yeah, that is weird. He wasn't dressed out though, right? He was just on the sideline.
He was. No, he was dressed out.
He was dressed out. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was odd. He was on the bench and dressed out.
I missed that. All right. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Weird. We have an email from our buddy Joan, who says, hi, Ryan and Keely. You can tell this football team is talented. They can be very fun to watch for either the last 2 minutes or the first quarter. They cannot sustain anything over 60 minutes, even over terrible opponents. The defense looks much improved, but I agree with Coach High that Drake Jackson isn't being utilized well. The offense still looks more like gumbo to me. They can't sustain drives with a run game, which is pathetic, and we have three talented backs. I also agree with Coach Hyde that if I was a running back, I wouldn't commit to USC because we have no run game and the other defense adjusts, and we can't sustain momentum throwing the ball. That's football 101. And obviously, Harrell and Hilton didn't pass that class. No pun intended. Even Bone's former Cincinnati would crush us, let alone Alabama. Hilton and Harrell should retake the class, football 101. Fight on, Joan Levis. And then, since she mentioned gumbo, I'm going to throw in another question with it that we got from Bill from Las Vegas, who said, this offense is looking a lot like it lacks a single philosophy. Are we looking at gumbo version part two? Is Clay Hilton meddling with Graham Harrell's offense? So two gumbo questions for you, Ryan.
Wow. Joan, not real happy with
no.
What's going on there. She just kind of took a shot at everybody. Yeah.
Joan, the Drake always Jackson brings the spice.
She does some spice. Yeah, Drake Jackson only had an assisted tackle. I know Harvey Hyde was not too keen on that one. I mean, I finishing up doing the ArtCast series that I was doing with Dr. Bartner, and we put like some highlights for the season on there. And you're like, hey, remember that Jake Jackson interception and stuff? He's made some big plays this year, but yeah, he didn't seem to do much in the game against Washington State. But I'm not getting the gumbo stuff, Keely, because I feel like this is an offense that has an identity. I don't feel like they're trying a whole bunch of different things. They're not necessarily like focusing on the run. They're throwing the football. Now they've mixed it up and thrown it to different guys, but it's been pretty consistent what makes this offense go. And it's Keaton Slovis throwing to wide receivers, not throwing to guys out of the backfield, not throwing to tight ends. It's pretty like straightforward. It's like you got Keaton Slovis and you got good wide receivers and you throw the ball to them. And I think there's been like 200 targets and like five of them been to tight ends or something like that. I mean, some crazy number, but it's really, I think it's the opposite of gumbo. Like, you know exactly what you're getting. You are getting Keaton Slovis throwing to wide receivers. So maybe it's not what you want to see. Maybe it's not, you know, guys under center and I formation and running the football and student body left and stuff like that. But there, I would disagree. I feel like there is an identity. It's just maybe an identity that some USC fans don't want or don't like or don't approve of. But I feel like this team has much more of an identity on offense than they did in 2018 when there really was that gumbo offense.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Do you think, Ryan, though, that people are saying gumbo just because they look out of sync? It just looks a little clunky this season. It just seems like they aren't on the same page or things just aren't moving well. And granted, that might just be because Keaton Slovis was off for the first couple of games and you saw the success he had against Washington State and maybe that's why it looks better. But do you think that gumbo could be translated to just out of sync or clunky? Because it just doesn't seem like it's functioning on all cylinders so far this season.
Yeah, no, I mean, maybe that's why, but I wouldn't use that term. I mean, the reason you'd say gumbo is because you're kind of throwing a lot of ingredients in there. It's like a big, you know, big stew or something. Like,
yeah,
this is more simple. This is like a grilled chicken breast. Like, you have, like, you know exactly what you're getting. Like, it's a grilled chicken breast, you know. Maybe you dress it up, and that's when you got the run game going. But if you just have to eat the grilled chicken breast, that's what you're doing, and it's good. And it works and it's simple and you know what you got. And that's this passing offense. Like, they're throwing the ball to wide receivers. Like, it's a simple ingredient, but it works and that's what they do. So yeah, I wouldn't say has it looked a little clunky at times and they weren't able to run the football and like you've had stalling out in the red zone and all that kind of stuff. Sure. But I mean, this game, you know, they were good in the red zone. They, you know, they score four touchdowns in their only four drives of the first quarter. You know, that was pretty impressive what they were able to do. You didn't have any touchdowns for Amon Ross St. Brown on the year, and he walks away 15 minutes later with four. I mean, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they're not like, or this might, what I think of the gumbo is different than what some of the listeners were saying, at least.
Yeah, I don't know. I was just trying to see if there was a different interpretation for what they were saying. Because it is, at times, it's almost like it's too simple. Would you say, Ryan, at least in the running scheme and whatnot?
Yeah. I mean, it looks like, yeah, maybe it's a non-seasoned chicken breast sometimes. You're always like, okay. Yeah, you want to spice it up a little bit. But they know what works. And I feel like that's just kind of what they're going with, which I like a lot better than, well, this works and this might work. And then we'll try a little of this. And then, well, what if we did this over there? Maybe that would work. And you're really just, it's grab bag. Like Dan, you know, Weber would always call it like grab bagging. And I'm not seeing that now, but there is you could argue the simplicity, like as the game goes on, USC hasn't scored a touchdown in the third quarter.
Yep.
The defenses kind of have a better understanding of what they need to do. Or, you know, are you able to limit things when the field gets shorter and you're in the red zone? So, yeah, I think those are more legit like criticisms than just like a generic, oh, it's gumbo. I just wouldn't call it that.
Yeah. And as far as what we've heard about this offense so much, Ryan, both Harrell and Helton have said it's an execution-based offense. So when you hear that and then hear what Helton said today on Tuesday about how players were taking turns, i.e. someone was messing up every other play, what does that say about the team overall if it's an execution-based offense and people are quote-unquote taking turns?
Yeah, well, that was weird because there were 16 rushes, right? By the running back. So we're not to get the Slovis stuff out of there. So, you know, whatever, he was sacked. There's 16 rushes and there was one rush that went for 5 yards and there was one that went for 7. And that's it. Like, that's the only good plays, or, you know, quote unquote good plays. You know, we've seen 40 something yard runs in the other game. Like, no, that didn't happen this one. The longest run was 7 yards. Basically two successful runs out of the 16. I don't think he, you know, Clay Helton said he went back individually, look at every play. If you can find a mistake like that in every play, like, well, this is a reason this didn't happen. This is the reason this didn't happen. And I think you have to look at the big picture. Like, if you were like, well, why did those three or four plays not work? Here's the thing. Here's why. Did this, this, this. If you're like, we ran it 16 times and not one of them went for a first down or, you know, 10 yards or whatever, that's got to be more of a bigger picture problem, not, oh, that one was a physical beat. And that, okay, so you're saying that guy got bit, physically beat. Otherwise, it would have been a 20-yard run. Like, I just don't buy that. So I feel like there's a bigger problem there, and part of it probably had to do with, you know, the offensive line. But I think some of it's just, you know, there's going to be certain defenses that they're not set up well to, you know, run the ball against. And, you know, maybe we saw a little bit more of that with Washington State. So if you're throwing the football over the yard and it's working, that's fine. I just, you know, for me, it's more about what do you do well? And they throw the football well, and they can run the ball well, not they should, or as Clay Helton was saying, like you have to be a championship team and all that stuff. I don't think this is an offense that's set up to do something like that. They're set up to throw the football, and then everything else sort of is like gravy after that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go to another question because it's touches on what we just talked about. It's okay. From Portland Mike, class of 67. He says, I, like everyone else, have noticed the team's lack of running and that it was a real problem. I was told that both of the guards were freshmen and relatively inexperienced, as were some of the other linemen. If that is the case, have we been unduly critical of the run game? Hopefully the O-line will be up to strength for UCLA. Portland Mike. So he was wondering, is this game not the game to be critical of USC's running game and the offensive line, given the COVID issues and the inexperience?
Well, I mean, like I said before, to be fair, the coaches didn't use it as an excuse. And it was only Graham Harrell only said that because he was asked about the offensive linemen.
Yeah.
You know, they were, what, 93 yards against Utah. So that's a far cry from the 170 a game also. And you had a full strength, you know, offensive line there. I think you can, you know, you're putting in a 6'7", 320 pound dude that you've coached up, you know, as long as some of these other guys, like, you know, it's like, yeah, they haven't played. Why haven't they played? Well, you haven't blown people out like you should have. Like, that's part of it is on you. So I'm not going to, like, give a full pass because this is the first time these guys got in a game. You had opportunities to get them in a game if you would have played well, and you didn't do that. I mean, Arizona is on an 11-game losing streak, and you needed a fourth-quarter touchdown to win. Like, come on. Like, that's a team you should blow out. If you're talking about championships, you should have blown out Arizona. No question about it. So,
yeah.
You could have got some of these guys in at some point. We saw on defense, man, they were substituting everybody in the second half. And there seemed to be more reluctance on the offensive side. So I would not say, Portland Mike, this is an excuse. The coaches haven't used an excuse. I'm not giving them a pass because of that. And like we already mentioned, you know, Ohio State, they're a pretty good team. They have a great quarterback, like a Heisman Trophy winning, you know, potential winning quarterback. They had four offensive linemen out, and they played a really good Michigan State defense. They're not a good team, but they are good against the run. And they ran for over 300 yards on them. So there was all the excuses in the world. But like, well, you got a quarterback like that. Why do you need to run the football? And four of your starting offensive linemen are out. And they're a really good run defense. Didn't matter. They ran for 300 yards. So to me, there's no excuse for not running for – you can't run for 5 yards against a Washington State team that's giving up 200 yards a game. Your backups are going to be better than some of the teams that Washington State played. So, yeah, that to me, that's like, no. That's not an excuse.
And that's why it's so weird when we go into these press conferences, at least for me, Ryan, because if you're talking about championships and you're talking about the elite team you want to be, but then you ask about the running issues and then we get kind of like a short answer about it. It just seems like, okay, well, it's confusing because it just seems like we're seeing different things in that sense. You know, Ryan?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, when... I don't want to harp on things they say too much, but it's like when you're talking about this team's getting better and they're improving, like you can say that about certain aspects of the team. I think Keaton Slovis looks better. He looks like he's throwing the ball better. The defense certainly is getting better, but something you harped on, it was like this, you know, crown jewel that you were running the football well. You can't go from 175 yards to 93 to 5 and have any thought that this is getting better. It's not getting better. That's something that's actually getting worse. You know, why is that? And sort of like those things are just like, well, there's this, there's that. But anything that happened to be going up, they're like, oh, we're getting, like, obviously, look, we're getting better. We're getting better. Like, well, yeah. I mean, there's some things that are getting better. You want the defense to be better. Special teams has been pretty good, I think, all year. And then, you know, Keaton Slovis getting better. That's kind of all you need. If the run game goes to crap, you don't need it. Like, you could do, you can win these games with, you know, defense, Keaton Slovis and wide receivers and some, and pretty good special teams, or, you know, above average special teams, which we haven't seen. But, you know, I'm not the one saying that you need the run game. That was Clay Helton that was saying that. And, like, that's going down, and then that's something you don't address. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of weird. But, yeah, sometimes you're just, like, getting the PR version of what's going on when you, like, can see things. You're like, well, obviously that isn't the case because we saw this, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's, I didn't want to harp anymore, but it was just trying to reference the differences in opinion maybe when it comes down to the pressers. But shall we go to a voicemail, Ryan?
Yeah, let's do it. I was going to do that. You can read my mind. We've been doing this a long time. You know what I'm going to do.
We have. It's true.
Keely, like, kind of keeps me in check. She's just, you know, I don't know what's going on. She tells me when I'm going off too much and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so, all right, let's do a voicemail.
Hi, Keely and Ryan. I'm back. I wasn't quite as disconnected as I intended to be. I guess I like USC football too much, but anyway, so after four straight wins, including at least one road victory, I'm told you I'd be back, so I'm back officially on the Peristyle podcast. So anyways, my question is, if USC played the top four teams in the CFPB right now, so that's Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, and Clemson, not necessarily in that order, what do you guys think the scores would be if USC played those teams and all of the teams, including USC, were at full strength and there were no COVID-19 sit-outs on either side? So, and if there were four games, USC against those four teams, what are your projected final scores? All else equal. Side on, Jason in Longhorn Country.
Hey, Jason, I think the point is, yeah, USC would probably get blown out by all those teams. Like, is that what you're trying to get me to say? Because that's what I'm going to say, because I think that's what would happen, but... I don't know. Do you have a different? I'm not going to give you a score. I just think it would be a lopsided game against all of those teams. I've seen them all play, and I think USC would probably lose to all of them handily. But I don't know. What do you think, Keely?
Nope, pretty much the same. Jason from Longhorn Country, glad to have you back. But he's trying to put us on the spot and expose us for our takes. But yeah, it would be a blowout for all four.
I mean, okay, so USC's 4-0. They got a chance to be 5-0 for the first time since 2006. Is it a normal year? Obviously not. Could they have lost a couple of those games? Obviously, yes. I mean, there's all you can do is really what's out there. And is it unfortunate that the best games on the schedule got lopped off? And, you know, even the team that you thought would be terrible is the only team that's undefeated on your schedule? Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? I mean, you know, USC played Arizona State. How many games did they win, Keely? Do you know how many? Or
Ohio State?
No, USC's played Arizona State.
Oh, sorry.
They have no wins.
Zero. Zero.
Arizona? Yeah, no wins. They're on a 11-game losing streak. Utah got a win, right? So that's good to, you know, get a win there. And then Washington State has one win also. They beat Oregon State. So it's not like the record of the teams USC's played so far has been good. And then the one team you thought would be terrible is undefeated in Colorado, and you missed that game. So it's really like all the opportunities to play like the better teams, because you could have played Oregon, even though they lost a couple games. You could have played Washington. You could have played Notre Dame. Like, you know, all those, they're gone. Like, you can't play those, and you can't get that back. So all you can do is play what's on the schedule. But I watch these games. I watch this team. I've watched those other games. If I had to, you know, what would the spread be? It would be, you know, two touchdowns or more for any of those teams that are in the top four, I would say. Even though USC gets a bump for talent and reputation and all that, I still think it would be a pretty large spread, probably Alabama being the largest one. But, you know, look at LSU. Like, that's a team that's sort of in disarray a little bit, but they got a lot of talent. And Alabama just, you know, rolled through them. Like, they're not even there. You know, maybe USC could be feisty for a quarter or two, but just the way you've seen them play, You can't come out and play one quarter against Alabama and say, oh, we scored. Even if you scored four touchdowns in one quarter, if you did nothing the rest of the game, you're still going to get killed, you know? So, yeah, I get what you're saying, Jason. I don't think they would beat any of those teams, but I'm not going to be super critical of USC going undefeated. It's like, yeah, I mean, we know that it's not the greatest schedule in the world anymore. And we know, like, the one game that they missed looked like it could have been the toughest game on the schedule that was revised, which I didn't think was going to be the case, but it's sort of just like this COVID roulette, and you're just, you know, you spin the wheel and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it would be like what we've seen with Helton teams going against physical, well-coached teams in the past couple of years. The talent would hang in for as long as it can, and then the more physical team would take over. That's just what's happened when USC goes up against the Ohio States and the Alabamas of the world. You know, it just doesn't work out for USC because they're just not as physical as the top teams in the nation.
Yeah.
You know? Shall we go to another question?
Sure.
We actually got it in the first quarter of Sunday's game. It's from Andrew in Brentwood, who said, hello, Ryan and team. Note, I'm writing this in the first quarter, so please pardon any cold takes. But should USC play every game on Sundays? 28-0 in the first quarter is a fantastic start. Credit to the staff and players for getting energized for such an odd game. My question is this referee the same one who penalized Marquis Stepp for shaking hands with Reggie Bush after his first touchdown? In my opinion, if you score four touchdowns in one quarter like Amon Ross St. Brown just did, you can do whatever you want. Let him ride Traveler up and down the sideline for all I care. In light of John Canzano's latest story on the Pac-12 and officiating, maybe the refs shouldn't put the spotlight on themselves when penalizing a kid for harmlessly spinning a ball on the ground. Fight on, Andrew and Brentwood.
Thanks for the question, Andrew. I mean, the spinning the ball thing is kind of funny. We talk about this on Tunnel Vision a little bit. That's something that we've seen Amon-Ra St. Brown do in high school. He kind of likes his antics and stuff. And, you know, I think the way the rules are, it's going to be a penalty. Is that something you could overlook, especially in, like, there's no fans and, you know, you're not taunting anybody. You're not doing it at someone. Yeah, you could probably let that go. As far as playing on Sundays, yeah, you know, I think USC's 3-2 now on Sunday games. They had a bunch of games like late 90s, early 2000s for those early season, like the kickoff classic kind of stuff. But like Keelan and I said earlier, that's kind of fun to play those games. And, you know, you get an opportunity. Guys like Talanoa Hufanga has a huge game and you're like, oh, I could see him play on Sundays. He seems to be doing pretty well. So with that there. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to see a lot of Sunday games in college football, but this is just a pandemic thing. And yeah, it was kind of fun to, you know, be a part of. We saw UCLA and Cal play, you know, 9 a.m. on Sunday. So kind of before NFL gets started. But this one was right in the middle of it. So that was a little different.
Yeah, but I liked it, though. But yeah, you can't spin the ball and get away with it. So Amon-Ra had some flash, but I guess you could do whatever you want if you get four touchdowns. And back to your point really quickly, Ryan, about just do what you're good at. I really hoped that they were going to go for Amon-Ra St. Brown's fifth touchdown because it was such a rare thing. I was like, why not just go for it? Why not really just sell out and just get him that fifth touchdown? I don't know.
Yeah, that's if you would have said, okay, it's 28-0 after the first quarter, this will be the game USC scores 50, right? You'd have been like, of course. Yeah, of course they're going to score 50. And to get 38 after that, you're like, oh, all right. But I did want to see Amon-Ra St. Brown at least go over 100 yards. And we talked about this on the Tunnel Vision, but he wasn't even Pac-12 player of the week for the offense, you know?
I know.
So Broussard had 301 yards rushing, but he didn't have any touchdowns. It was funny. I was watching that game, and the poor kid, he would get the ball at, like, his own 20 and, like, run it for 75 yards and get tackled. And then he was too tired and they'd let someone else come in and vulture the touchdown. So he was like a big yardage guy, no touchdowns. And Amon-Ra St. Brown was not a big yardage guy, but had all the touchdowns. So I don't know. I'm still more impressed with the four touchdowns than 300 yards rushing.
Yeah, I know Shaka made the case on Tunnel Vision for 300 yards, but I was just more impressed by four touchdowns in one quarter. That's an impressive feat, especially when he had zero touchdowns coming into the game. He made short work of that. So I would vote for Amon-Ra St. Brown, but who knows?
Yeah, no, I would have too. But, you know, and it's funny, we had to, early on in the show, they mentioned Chris Trevino. I thought he did a great job with you guys on your, make sure you guys check out the Family Feud. And I love Chalk on getting that wrong, thinking that Eric Cropenhook was going to have more touchdowns than Amon-Ra St. Brown. And it's like you couldn't have scripted any better. Like I listened to the show. They said, and he's like, oh yeah, I got a 2-0 lead. I'm going to take Eric Cropenhook. And Amon-Ra St. Brown like catches one. You're like, uh-oh, he's halfway there. Then he catches another one. You're like, oh, right, he's tied already. Because the third one's like, okay, well, he's never going to get past now. And then catches the fourth one just to like, you know, put a little cherry on top of that Sunday. I kept thinking of Shotgun the whole time I was watching that.
I know. We kept getting tweets about it too. It was so funny. I loved it. And especially because I said, I was like, nope, I'm leaving it. You can't count out Amon-Ra St. Brown. I was like, you never know what he could do. I'll believe it. And I think Chris said, oh, well, what if he gets 3 touchdowns in one game? And I was like, yeah, you never know. It could happen. And then here he goes. He gets 4 in one quarter. So it was like, literally, we could have scripted it. Someone like probably played Amon-Ra St. Brown, the podcast, and they were like, okay, let's prove Shotgun wrong. And I loved every second of it.
Yeah. It was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Shall we go to an email?
Let's do an email.
An email from Marina Valley. And then I think we have a voicemail from Marina Valley. So okay. It's from Junior from Marina Valley who says, hello, Trojans. Now that Jake Garcia has decommitted from USC, what other options are open besides Miller Moss? As always, fight on, Junior from Marina Valley.
Yeah. So, this was interesting, right? When we've heard from, we've heard from Jake Garcia for quite a while about, he was going to be the longtime commitment for USC, and Miller Moss comes on he commits later on, and then you're like, okay, is Jake Garcia going to decommit? He's sticking with it. COVID hits. He moves out of state to play in a high school in Georgia. His parents have to get like a legal separation just so he could play. Someone writes a story on it. He becomes ineligible. He's moved to another high school and gets to play. And now he ends up decommitting. And USC has one quarterback commit in the class now. But then part of it was they were going after Jackson Dart, who's a 4-star pro-style quarterback from Draper, Utah. Someone that they were looking at. And, you know, is there some concern that USC had one quarterback in Jake Garcia and then they get a second one and now they're looking at a third one? But, you know, if you Gerard Martinez talks about this a lot, is just really you've been burned a lot of times. You can't stop recruiting just because you have someone committed. It doesn't necessarily you're going to like get that person to commit or sign, but you know, if someone drops out, you want to be able to still have a relationship with some of these other guys. So it looks to me like Jackson Dart's the guy, right now, if you look at his page, a lot of people think he's going to go to BYU, but that's someone that definitely USC has been, recruiting hard. So I think that's where you'd have to look first as far as like adding somebody. Sam Heward is a Washington commit, that's someone that they've recruited as well, but I would probably look at Jackson Dart at this point. I don't know if you have any thoughts, Keely.
Yeah, and I think what kind of shows you that they're definitely looking towards Dart is that last week they offered a preferred walk-on scholarship to 3-star wide receiver Noah Kjaer. I don't know if that's how you say his last name, but he's basically Dart's right-hand man. He's the receiver that he's thrown to in high school. So the fact that you give a preferred walk-on offer to a wide receiver from Dart's high school and that he's close with kind of is a wink and a nod of like, hey, come to USC,
Yeah. So I still think USC will get 2 quarterbacks in this class. I was a little skeptical that Garcia would stick around early on, but then once he did, you're like, all right, well, he'll probably stick around. And then that fell apart. But this is COVID-y. He was a Southern California kid. If he didn't go to high school in Georgia and to play, would he have stuck with USC? Probably. I don't know. I mean, this opens up new opportunities when you go out of state like that. So we will see what happens there. But thanks for that question. But speaking of Moreno Valley, we got our buddy Curtis, too.
Hi, Curtis from Moreno Valley. For the USC fans, a win is a win, unless you want to trade with the Oregons of the world. With 2 losses now in the used-to-be undefeated Washington Huskies. We're the undefeated ones now. And it looks like if you're in man coverage, we can tell immediately and we can throw immediately. it was third down and one when Keaton Slovis threw that dime to Tyler Vons in the end zone. A bomb. No ducks. I think that's what Washington State had been watching the film. They challenged Keaton Slovis' arm. They thought he would be throwing ducks, so they stacked the box so he couldn't run. They didn't go soft. And you see what happens. I think we're in good shape, and I appreciate my team, Curtis from Moreno Valley.
Curtis. Well, so he's kind of going back to the win is a win thing. And, tell you what, Curtis, USC wins out. Is a win a win if they don't make the college football playoff? No, I mean, they didn't look good enough, and they weren't going to, you know, win the beauty contest. I think, yeah, win. It's much better to win than to lose, but it depends what your goals are. You want to win at a higher level? We talked about this before. We don't need to rehash all this kind of stuff. But Keaton Slovis did look a lot better, and we talked about this on Tunnel Vision. Would it be, you know, having some time off? Was that going to be something that had a positive impact on Slovis? And it seemed like it did, you know, and Graham Harrell talked about it a little bit today too, Keeley, but you know, it sounds like, you know, the mental aspect of the game, you know, having a little time off seemed to help him a little bit.
Yeah. That's something that I asked you and Shaka, and I was like, is this time off going to have him focus more on what he's doing and not work well for him? But it seemed to work well for him. So that's a positive sign. And like Curtis was saying, I think there are definitely positives you take out of this game. USC, it was a funky COVID practice week for them. It was a Sunday game. They could have laid an egg and they didn't. You have the defense really capitalizing and making the most out of turnovers and whatnot. Talanoa Hufanga, tip drill, interception, and hurdling a guy. You know, there's good things to take out of this win. It just, and like I said, if you're a fan, you can take whatever you want out of the game. You know, if you're too critical, if you're too optimistic, hey, you're a fan, do what you want. But, you know, this team says that they want to be a championship team. They have elite goals. Well, they're not looking like that in every area and every facet of the game. So that's why we say what we say, but a win is a win. But like Ryan said, it's just not every win is a win when the college football playoff committee is looking at the team.
Yeah. But I mean, Curtis, you're the optimist. I don't think USC fans should be upset that they're undefeated. If they beat UCLA, losing to UCLA will definitely be a blow. And there's going to be a lot of criticism, and that it'll be warranted. That's fine. I mean, UCLA is a pretty good team. Even though they got the two losses, this, you know, they've won three games. You know, USC's played a total, you know, all the teams USC's played have won a total of two games at this point. So UCLA's won three on their own. This is a real team. They're playing better football right now. And I think you feel good about getting a win over the Bruins. It's your rival and, you know, puts you into the Pac-12 championship game. I don't think there's any excuses for winning. You know, you won, you go 5-0 and you go to the championship game. That's fine. Do you feel great? Like this is a national championship type caliber team? No, I don't think it is. I don't even think Curtis think it is, but, you know, you don't want to give yourself demerits because you did what you needed to do. You won all the games that were put in front of you. Yeah. Do you feel amazing about it? No, it's weird COVID year, but this is this is going to be a good game against a good UCLA team. From what I've seen, we've seen teams look good one week and then look like crap the other week. So who knows what happened? Like Washington State really looked worse than what he's seen the first two games, but they had 2 weeks off, you know? So there's so many X factors in this. But I don't want anyone to feel bad about winning the Pac-12 South and winning the Pac-12. If you can do that, I still think that's an accomplishment, even though, like you said, you know, you're missing, you know, your toughest games on the schedule are no longer there.
Yep. Completely agree, Ryan.
Shall you're we go to me too much, Keila? You got to like tell me I'm wrong all the time. That's...
I do sometimes. But at the end of a lengthy pod, it's sometimes great to agree with you.
Yeah.
We have two more emails. One of them is from Jack from New Jersey, who said he had a long list of things that he was basically ranting about. So we're going to pick some topics that he talked about. First off, he said, if the offense doesn't develop a better running game, quality high school running backs are not going to come to USC. I know you love the concept of the air raid, but at what cost to a well-balanced offense? Just ask Coach Hyde. USC is going to become wide receiver U and be 8-4 every year. We all know that has to change. So basically, Jack has refuted your main thesis for this podcast, Ryan.
I'm not saying I love the air raid. I love having some sort of direction for the offense. And it could have been the wing tee. It could have, whatever it was, it needed to be something that you had an identity and you knew what it was. And I feel like Graham Harrell, in his version of the air raid, has an identity. And we've seen them run the football more when he was at North Texas. They usually had a different kind of running back. I mean, they're, you know, working in these bigger guys, guys that just that look like they could run behind, you know, in an I formation. They didn't really have those kind of running backs at North Texas. And they would, you know, use them in different ways and slip the runs in there. And you know, they had like a 60-40 run, you know, pass the run percentage, something, you know, a ratio, something like that. But I feel like this offense does have an identity, you know, and does it impact running back recruiting is the big question. Now, this is an area that USC has struggled a little bit recruiting. So, you know, right now you got Brandon Campbell from Katy, Texas. He's a four-star running back. He's been a, you know, commit for quite a while. But that's really it right now. I mean, they're going after Brian Cardwell from San Diego. You know, he's another four-star guy. They have, you know, some other dudes on their target list. But to me, that's, you know, you're losing some guys. You need to get more, you know, running backs in there. And I'm not saying the reason why is because they're running the air raid. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to pinpoint exactly why. But if you're concerned about that and running the football, it's going to be hard to get running backs. Yeah, and maybe you need to get a different kind of running back, like someone, you know, they're more of the scat back kind of guys, which not traditional like you see at USC all the time. I don't know. But they haven't been recruiting lights out at the running back position. And I'm not going to point to exactly why, but that's definitely something that you could be concerned with. I'm not concerned about the offense overall, but they need to do a better job recruiting, you know, running backs at this point. I don't know your thoughts, Keely.
Yeah, I know there has been some rumblings on the P worry about Brandon Campbell's status. And I know I think he sounded a little frustrated on social media. So I think that's something to definitely watch for. But I think, you know, I think we even had the running back parent in the chat on Tunnel Vision. And I think there obviously has to be some frustration if you're a running back because you're just not getting the yards and the stats that you really want. So, I mean, it's definitely something to watch for. But I don't know, Ryan. I think they have to figure it out. And I think it starts with the offensive line. And that's something we've talked about, the offensive line recruiting ad nauseum on this podcast. So we don't have to go into it. But I just think it's multi-layered issues that are kind of coming home to roost right now.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there.
Jack also had another issue that he wanted to bring up. It was about USC's COVID issues. He said, I may be wrong, but if the COVID infected USC players were mainly linemen, might that not speak to the close contact that they had playing Utah, which was having a difficult time handling their own COVID outbreaks? USC was very clean until that game. Yeah, that was a theory that popped up, but that's false just because USC figured out that they probably had a false negative test with the original offensive lineman who tested positive. And then just based on when symptoms appeared, he was infectious starting on Saturday on game day. So that theory doesn't make sense because if they were infected by Utah, it would have taken a couple more days for that to really set in the incubation time. So I don't think it was Utah, at least originally. And then the spread kind of happened from there among the offensive linemen. So I don't think it was a Utah issue on that standpoint.
Yeah, so. Jack, and I haven't heard of any like on-field transmission of the virus, really. It's really not been like, oh, you know, Colorado had it. Colorado, that's a bad example. But you know, Arizona State played USC, and Arizona State was out for 3 weeks. And no one at USC got it, you know. It usually happens. And for the, like what Keely said, from what we had heard, I think John Wilner wrote about this a little bit too, some of the details. But the only day players don't get tested was Sunday because that's a day off. And if you get a false negative, which we had heard it happened, that kind of screws you because then, you know, you get a false negative on the game day. Now you're around your play, you know, other people. Then you don't get tested again on Sunday because that's your day off. And then, so you really can't find out for, you know, it's like missing a couple of days. So it's sort of like a little loophole in the daily testing thing. Obviously, you want the test to be accurate. The fact that you test daily, if one test is off, it's usually not that big of a deal. This one seemed to cause a little bit more problems because it was like back to back with an off day. So you basically went a couple of days without knowing that a guy was positive, which the way the system set up you normally wouldn't happen. So it's to me, this was like a, I think USC's done a really good job of trying to contain everything. And this was just sort of like a freak thing that happened from my understanding.
Yeah. And the fact that USC was able to walk away with just four positives, because they had a similar situation to ASU, and ASU was taken out for a long time and they had a lot of spread. So the fact that USC was able to kind of batten down the hatches and figure things out and not have it spread everywhere, I think is a major testament to USC, how seriously they've taken it and just the protocols they have in place. So well done for USC to somehow get it together, play on a Sunday against Washington State.
Yeah. So. Four positives. You get like, you know, seven whatever guys in quarantine, which you're you know, you can test out if you're positive. You can't when you're in quarantine. You're like, you're stuck in there. For Arizona State, I mean, USC missed one game. You know, they moved the game from Friday to Sunday and they made it work. It sucks the game they missed because it was a big one against Colorado. I mean, Arizona State, similar thing happens, like you said, and like Herm Edwards is sick. Like everybody, I mean, it went all over the place. They missed three games. So,
yeah.
And that's after playing a game. So this isn't like to start. So yeah, that's, I think USC's handled it well, and it took just to miss the game. It took like this really kind of freak thing happening. Without that freak thing, like you might've been missing an offensive lineman or something for a game, but I don't think USC would have had to miss the game.
Yeah. It also was just a freak thing in the sense that, third positive came on Thanksgiving when the county wasn't really available, and three was now considered an outbreak in the eyes of the county. It was like a whole thing. So it was just, it was just bad luck for USC all around in that sense, but they came out of it, and it was described to me as a minor miracle that they were able to have as little spread as they did. So congrats to USC on that front. But we have one last email, Ryan, and it's from Don. And he's actually talking about Corey Foreman. He says, is Corey Foreman the most hyped high school player since you've been doing your show and podcast? Do you think he can live up to this hype? The Greg Biggins interview revealed a few things, in my opinion. One, Foreman appears to be impressed with Georgia more than any other team. Two, USC actually has a chance, a long shot, but Foreman was positive about the new staff and being close to home, and Helton's family philosophy philosophy appears to matter to him. Foreman sounded like a very mature, thoughtful, and grounded young man. Must have a very sound family influence. Don.
Hey, Don. Thanks. I mean, he's the number one player in the country, so there's obviously going to be some hype, but a lot of it just depends on what's going down around. When USC was recruiting at the, you know, they're always getting like the number one or number two class or whatever, a top three, four class all the time. I mean, there was always dudes that you were, you know, you grab the Adoree Jackson or Juju Smith-Schuster or Damian Mama, like that was all in one class, like all these, you know, five-star guys right like here in Southern California. And there was a lot of hype around a lot of them. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been out to Sarah High School and you're covering like the Marquise Lees or the Robert Wood. Like there's always dudes that are getting a lot of hype. Now, they weren't the number one players in the country like, you know, Corey Foreman is. And I think with USC being a little more down, it's tough because you really need this guy. You know, you need to add him to your class to try to get back on track, especially with, you know, the powers from outside of the conference coming into California and cherry picking some of the best guys. We've seen that happen. You know, you get Bryce Young and DJ and all these guys that are going out of state. That's a big deal. But also Oregon and even Washington coming in and taking some guys from California and from the West that are high ranked four or five star guys, or keeping guys at the rare, you know, five star in the Pacific Northwest and keeping them home, as opposed to having USC go in and cherry picking out, you know, a Zach Banner or a Taylor Mays or guys like that. That's typically what USC would do. Austin Jackson, you know, from Arizona, USC goes in and gets him as a five star lineman. Like that's not happening as much anymore. So I think it's more about USC's state of desperation as far as recruiting goes. You're coming off their worst class we've ever seen. You need to get some of those dudes, especially a guy that's in your backyard who's like basically best friend is already on your team. You want to get guys like that. So I wouldn't say he's the most hyped. And there's been a lot of super hyped guys over the years. I mean, like Matt Barkley had, you know, there was a ton of hype around him. JT Daniels himself was ton of hype when he, you know, comes early. There was a lot of guys that just had, you know, a lot of hype about them. But Corey Foreman is just important because USC needs a win, and they can't let another local, you know, potential legend get away like they've had the last couple of years.
Yeah, no, exactly, Ryan. I mean, how do you see this one going? Do you have a sense right now?
I don't really. Like, it's, I mean, it's so weird right now. And just, you know, USC's not in the best place as far as, you know, they're doing better, obviously. They're doing better than what we've seen before. And I think just being local in the pandemic is like, you know, that's a great thing, right? You need that. The local thing helps you a lot because it's just, you know, he's a guy that has the means to go out and take some visits and stuff. But, you know, is he more hyped than like a Kayvon Thibodeau that was like the number two player in the class a couple years ago? I'm not sure. There's a bunch of guys I think that are kind of hyped like that. I mean, if I had to, I think USC's got a pretty good shot at getting him. But I just don't have a sense of like, okay, I really feel he's going to do this or not. I mean, he's someone that just seems to like, he could go anywhere, you know, he could end up at Clemson again, or he could be USC or stay. I don't know. I mean, I think it's important to keep him on the West Coast. But obviously if you're a USC fan, you want to keep him at USC, but a guy like him going out of state in a pandemic, I think would be a bad sign for local recruiting overall.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It shall be interesting to see for sure. He's signing but not announcing until the All-American game, right?
Yeah, so sure. Talanoa Hufanga did this too. Some other guys have done this where they sign but then they'll commit at a, you know, which I don't even know they're doing. I mean, I think some of these games.
Oh, true.
Yeah, like they're supposed to announce in January or whatever, but I'm not sure what the status of all the games are. Like, usually you go out for like the Polynesian Bowl, you know, that's fun. I've, you know, been to San Antonio for the All-American Bowl many, many times. And I believe I got an email that said that was canceled, but I don't remember. It's hard to keep track of everything that's what's going or what's canceled or what.
Yeah. Understandable.
All right.
That's it. Yep.
That's all we got. There's a long one.
I know.
It's a lot of talking. I did like a, you know, like I said, I did the art cast right before this. So it's like, you know, you get like, you start talking for 2.5 hours. It's like, okay, I'm ready to stop talking for a bit.
Yeah, that's understandable for sure.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up. Keely, great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's Keely Yor. I am Ryan Abraham. We thank all of you for tuning in to the Peristyle Podcast, and we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on PeristylePodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
World of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!